Hello, heroes, and welcome to another exciting episode of One Shot. I'm James D'Amato, your host and game master. Heroes, this is the last episode of One Shot before we begin the final round of auditions to see who will be replacing me as host of the One Shot podcast. Frankly, I did expect this moment to be a little bit more emotional for me, but there's been a lot of build-up to this over here at One Shot HQ. We're still finishing out our run on Chubo's Marvelous Wish-Granting Engine, but next week we will have a guest host of the show, who may be the new permanent host of the show. And you, our dear listeners, will help us determine that. I'm going to have more details about that in the mid-roll of this week's episode, so you will definitely want to stick around to listen to that. But for now, let's get to the show. This is a... I'm going to tell you, Gion, what it was about. I think was a time where Seji could have gotten hurt. But I'm going to leave it in your hands whether or not Seji understood that.
Yeah, I think it was pretty patently obvious. I think it was when the kid who bullies me at school, Billy Sovereign, I think he, like... It wasn't even that noticeable, or sorry, it wasn't that dramatic an incident. I am pretty sure, and I'm going to bookmark this in the recording, or bookend this in the recording as like a thing we can check in about as players later, but like, I'm pretty sure that like, this is not just verbal bullying. Like, I'm pretty sure Billy Sovereign has either beat me up or tried to beat me up at least once or twice over the course of our schooling. He's a very physical bully. But in this case, it wasn't that bad. It was literally just he shoved me into like the bushes as he passed me when we were on our way to class. And I think I even kind of laughed about it. Like, well, at least it was a soft landing. And I think it was the joke that made you mad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think Chubo struggles a lot around that bully. And I think, honestly, like, it's such a great parallel to this situation. Because there are a lot of obvious solutions for a bully like that, for someone like Chubo.
Is that strong?
And can do the things that Chubo can do. But there is something so anathema about those solutions, something that he refuses to engage with. And so instead he has this anger that he tries to release. And, you know, in that situation, he's caught between two worlds of... You know, these things are happening to Seji, and I can't figure out how to stop them. And it's so imperative that I not give in to the thoughts that I have about stopping them. And so that...
Is it upsetting that Billy Sovereign never goes for you?
Yeah. I think it is. I think it would be so much simpler if he went after me.
But he doesn't. He treats you like you don't even exist.
Yeah.
And with me, it's like a shark scenting blood in the water. Like, he beelines for me if there is any opportunity. And I think I can tell that you are angry, and just like then, it is really hard to tell whether you are angry at the situation or whether you're angry at me. For some reason, and because you don't talk about it, I don't know. And so I am also very quiet on the ride to our house. Or sorry, my house. I think I instinctively think of it as our house, actually, sometimes, because you spend so much time there. And when we get out, I say, I can meet you in the kitchen. I know you don't like going down to the prep room, but I gotta get her into the... I think my family and I, as an aside, I think my family and I call the morgue portion the cooler. It's a little irreverent, but, you know, and I say, I have to get her down to the cooler, so it won't take a minute. There's probably a dumb waiter where I don't have to, like, fucking balance the gurney down a bunch of antique stairs. Some kind of birdcage elevator in the building. It's one of those. Mm-hmm. So I unlock the front door and we come in and I realize, oh, I guess everyone's out. If you want, I don't know. Do you want to have a snack first and then play some games?
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, okay. Here. And I hand you like a little bag of dried mealworms. If you want to give Vixoth a treat, you can. I'll be right back. And I am wheeling the gurney towards the elevator.
Chubo walks with a purpose and like a bearing that Chubo almost never has. There is just a lot of intensity about everything in his movements. He makes a beeline for the kitchen. And he also like, he'll, you know, thoughtlessly like grab the mealworm and like bring out, what is the name of the animal again?
Vixoth.
Yeah. Get its scent in the air so Vixoth will come over. But Chubo like makes a beeline for the kitchen and a beeline for an apron and immediately starts cooking. Like, is trying to sink some of these emotions and some of this stuff that he is grappling with into preparing a meal.
Can I get an intention on that?
Absolutely. So definitely going to be domestic tasks.
Yes.
And now that I understand a little bit more of how the system works, I am going to put 3 into it.
You can only spend in increments of 2. Ah, so if you want
4 then.
0, 1, 2, 4. Ooh, 4. Very nice. And what's your aim here? Is it to make a really good meal, or is it to process your emotions, or is it both?
It is both. So what I am making is a meal that Iris would have appreciated. Maybe even a meal that Iris told me about. And I think this is key. This is key to Chubo's whole thing. Is Iris told Chubo about a dish that she would enjoy when she was younger. She said the name of the dish. She never said what was in it. And so Chubo, in his head, when he was listening to Iris, would think about what that dish must be. And he is now in this kitchen, in his friend's kitchen, making that dish.
What, give me the punchline. What did he hear?
Like, you know, it's like if somebody had said, like, oh, I used to love a quiche when I was younger. Like, he has no idea what a quiche is. So it's like what the word quiche means to a person who has never had a quiche and has nothing else to go on except that this person thought it was delicious to the point where towards the end of their life, they told someone about it over and over and over.
Then yes, it's quiche. How does Chubo artistically interpret quiche?
I think quiche is a way of preparing. Okay, so we've mentioned that like the meat industry is not very big on this island. So I think fish. I think I'm doing something with fish here. Yeah, I think it is something in the way that it is being cut and cooked. Like, it's like quiche, quiche, quiche. How does that word make me feel emotionally? Feels small and cute.
I think it makes you feel like miso salmon tastes. I'm not gonna lie.
Mm.
Like, you're interested in stir-frying this with vegetables over rice because it seems like it would be something that heals you.
Yeah.
That is what quiche is in your mind. And what you make is
excellent approximation of miso salmon with, like, a salad side to it, but quiche it is not. Do you present it to Seiji like it is with, I've made quiche.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and before that happens, before that flourish of a presentation happens, at the same time that you start cooking, I think I am downstairs, standing next to Iris's body on the shelf before I slide her in. I haven't pulled the sheet back. I haven't looked at her since putting her in the envelope. What happened is not sitting right with me. Your reaction to it is just making it feel worse. And I am going to invoke Seiji Sense to try to detect unreality on her, like on her body itself. What has she been touched by? Did it follow me home?
Her body is covered in a thin film of whatever was in that water, and it's pinging your sense. And I think as you feel it pulse once, you feel it pulse again, and it's in two bodies, and more, then four, then eight, then 16, then the whole place is covered in it, and then it's to the point where you can't think, you can't see anything else beyond the incredible glow that this entire room is giving off, and then nothing again. Something's trying to mess with you.
I think, you know, the time it takes for Chubo, like, miso salmon is not a complicated meal, but it is, what, like, 20 minutes? Maybe half an hour or so?
Yeah.
I think as that starts happening, my temptation is to call it a vision, right? Like, my temptation is to deny that it's real, but it probably is. It's as real as I am, I imagine. And I think I start talking to Iris's body as though her ghost is here, even though it's not.
What do you say?
I think I say, I wish you could talk to me. I wish you could tell me what's happening so that I could help you better. I wish I could help myself. I don't like this. And I look up and the room is glowing. And I say, is this Chubo's wish catching up to me somehow? Is this happening because everything else isn't supposed to be happening? Am I overstaying some kind of welcome? I look back down at her sheet-covered face. And I say, is there any way you can help me at all? And I think I'm just met by dead air. Is there any way you can show me if this is actually real? And again, I think I'm met. There's nothing. There's not even an inkling. It's like there's just a vacuum. And I sigh, and with the room still glowing and pulsing around me, I slide her into her shelf and make sure the label is right, and I shut the door and walk upstairs.
There's nothing for you there. But you do smell miso salmon.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, almost right at the top of the stairs rather than in the kitchen, Chubo has, like, the plate in front of him with the flourish of a TV chef. And what do you say, Chubo?
I've made quiche.
I look down at it. Thanks, Chubo.
XP emotion for both of you.
Great.
I've made quiche. Thanks, Chubo. Combo.
I think I add, I really like quiche. How did you know? And what I mean is I really like miso salmon, but Chubo is a walking lesson in yes and, right? I am very used to this at this point.
Iris really loved quiche. She talked about it a lot.
Did you make some for yourself too? Did you forget again?
I did forget. Can I have
okay,
some of
yours? Okay, well, yeah, let's split this. It's a big fillet. It'll be fine.
Something I think I want to cut in very quickly, because of the amount used, this is not just something effective. It's really effective. It somehow moves you closer to the things that you want in the long term. Like, this is the most healing miso salmon that you've ever eaten, Seji, and you've had quite a lot of it in your lifetime. It melts in your mouth. Like, this is imbued with love somehow. The abstract idea of quiche is communicated in this, and you're not really sure how that works, but it's present anyway.
Yeah, the substantialness of it, right? Like, it feels
more
substantial.
It fills you up more than it should.
Yeah, exactly. This is really, really good, Chubo.
Thank you. Seji, I don't know what you saw, but I know it's a lie.
I mean, that, you know, how can you know it's a lie if you don't know what I saw?
Well, I also saw something, and I know it's a lie. Whatever or whoever that was tried to show me what I am afraid of. And I tried really hard to use the truth to do that. Chubo has this 1,000-yard stare. And then Chubo turns to you and looks into your eyes. And the hardness of that stare melts. I'm afraid of something that doesn't matter anymore.
I don't know when it started, but at some point, not very long ago, I have been noticing how beautiful your eyes are. It is extremely uncomfortable. I think when you say that, I open my mouth, close it again, and then I say, yeah, this quiche is really, really good. Real good. And I continue eating. I want to know what you mean, but if I keep making eye contact with you, I am just gonna start sweating so much. And I just
have... But also, you'll find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've said before that you often use your heart reader power without meaning to.
Oh, that's true. Does it work on Chubo?
Well, yeah.
Holy
obviously.
Shit. Wait, that didn't occur to me before. Oh, God. Yes. I can't turn it off. I can turn the dial up and down, but I can never turn it off. It's like one of those old stoves, like an Aga stove, where the burner is always on. It's just a question of whether you're searing something or putting it in a warming drawer. And I think,
you know what he wants in this moment.
What do you want, Chubo? This is me asking you not out loud, but yeah. your want just floats through me. And I want to hear it in your words.
Yeah, I really have to frame. Boy, it's hard to put this to words. I want you to know how important you are to me and how much that matters.
Here is quiche.
It's not even that. Your quiche, like, to the world, almost. The way Iris talked about quiche when we were on that bench, she would talk to the crows about it as much as she would talk to me about it. And she'd talk about having it on her birthday. And she would talk about making it for her husband. And she would talk about teaching her kids how to make it. It was this thing that I didn't understand. I couldn't understand. But I understood what it meant. And I understood why a person who had lived the life that Iris had lived, which was incredible, full of so much love, so much excitement, adventure. Why a person like that, sitting on a bench with a stranger and some crows, kept returning to it as a thing she needed to explain, not just to a stranger, not just to some animals, but to the world itself, because it's something so profound that she came to understand through her life.
I am staring at you, Chubo. You know, I was never in any real danger back there. You don't need to worry about me like that.
You can get hurt.
I mean, yeah, you didn't, you know, wish for an invulnerable best friend. I'm just a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not arguing? Why do I feel like we're arguing?
And Chubo, like, resettles himself, like, takes the plate of quiche that is between them, sets it aside, and, like, grabs Seji's hands and, like, squeezes them. So, like, you feel each other. And says to Seji, "You're a person. You can get hurt. Of course I'm worried about that. Of course I'm worried about that."
Without realizing I am matching the pressure you're putting on my hands. And I think also without realizing I am starting to intertwine our fingers instead of just clasping hands. Like, oh, when we were really little kids, I think that's how we like held hands, right? The way little kids unselfconsciously do. And without realizing, I am starting to lean in slightly toward you. And I want you to tell me what snaps me out of it and makes me stand up and say, let me bring the dishes to the sink. Like, something happens. I don't know what it is. You tell me.
Gosh. Oh, I know what it is. Yeah. Our fingers are intertwining, and we are leaning in towards each other. And I think the another thing, especially because like you've got this heart read on Chubo, I kind of feel like he's a little bit of an open book and like does have this very serious, like, overall emotional thing that he is trying to convey through all of his words, which are clumsy, and his gestures, which are a little bit more precise because they cut through so much clumsiness. There are also, like, these small impulses. And Chubo is disquieted. You know, he also experienced something unpleasant that he hasn't spoken about. There is a dual desire. One, there is like this powerful yearning for comfort. And another that I don't think you understand, because how could you understand anyone saying these words? It's a wild thing for a person to say. But you think you understand because there are easy ways to interpret it. He wants to feel like he is in this body. And the combination of like those desires and the fact that you are leaning towards each other, I think it becomes too intimate to the point where the spell is broken, you know, or has to be broken, because otherwise Seji would given to an impulse, which it feels like Seji is very aware of and has protocols to deal with.
I am aware of it, and I am uncomfortable with it. I think that just the fact of this growing intimacy and how mutual it seems like it could be is enough to just make me stand up. And it's one of those things where I just stand up, and there is a solid 2 seconds before I say or do anything, and that's when I say, I'm gonna bring our dishes to the sink. Do you want ice cream? There's Rocky Road.
Oh, yes!
I think, I don't say it out loud, but internally I'm like, thank God. That was close. Yeah.
Do we end scene there?
I think so, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, not quite there. I think as I dump the dishes in the sink, and Chubo, you know where the bowls are, and you are already, like, scooping things out, like, sundae portions, you know? Like, it's not just a simple scoop of ice cream. You're pulling out all the stops, condiments. And as I am watching you make the kind of ice cream sundae a, like, six-year-old would make, I think to myself, I think I have a crush on Chubo. And that's when the scene ends.
Oh no,
indeed.
On so many levels, oh dear.
Oh no.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll! So, let's talk about next week. Next week, we'll have the first of the final round applicants for prospective hosts of the One Shot podcast. Over the last several months, I have reviewed applications by many talented performers. And the decisions that we made to get our final list of applicants were not easy. I once again have to thank and commend the many talented people who auditioned for this role. Our final applicants are people I am frankly honored even went out for the role. And I am so excited to see what they'll do. Because for the final round of application to be host of the One Shot podcast, we've recorded games with these folks. And you are going to listen to all of them and help us make our decision. We're still in the middle of producing some of these games, but each applicant will receive their own run on One Shot, where they will run a one-shot adventure of their chosen RPG with their chosen cast. I will play along with them and then listen to the final product along with the rest of you and try to make my decision. That's where you listeners come in. For each applicant, we will be gauging audience reactions and factoring those reactions into our final decision. I want each listener to review these series carefully and fill out a corresponding survey. Those surveys are going to be first available to our Patreon backers and then available to our general listening public. The folks you hear on the next few series of One Shot could be the new permanent host, and I want to make sure that they are someone that you will be excited to listen to for years to come. So, Patreon listeners, be sure to look out for the link to that survey when it goes live. It might not accompany the first week of the new series because we want to give everybody a chance to settle into the story before they give us reactions. And for our general listening audience, we'll distribute that survey publicly after each series has concluded. We'll be doing our own internal review of each series that appears on One Shot, but the opinion of our audience matters. So if you care about this show and you care about the direction that we are going to move in the future, I would love to hear your voice. Patreon backers can look for that update coming in the near future, and our general audience listeners can look out for a link on our social media. We'll be running an abridged version of these instructions along with each series that airs on One Shot. And gosh, I do love exciting news, so I suppose I will reveal the identity of our first applicant. The first talented game master that you'll be reviewing for these auditions is Super Dylan. You might know them as Super Dylan on Twitter, a cast member of the Atomless podcast and stream, and really so many other productions within Actual Play. I sincerely hope you enjoy. Before we get back to the episode, I do want to take a quick moment to thank our backers on Patreon. Without all of you, we wouldn't be able to do any of this. That includes all 500 plus episodes of One Shot that we have done up to this point, and of course, all of the work that we have done to find a new host for the show. If you like what you're hearing and you want to support future productions, please head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to support us. But the thing I can do is thank you sincerely. From the bottom of my heart, you help us make incredible things. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. And with all that out of the way, let's get back to the show.
All right. So, that is another emotion XP for both of you. And, Chubo, you immediately switched topics when you felt uncomfortable. That's another point toward a fortitude.
Yeah. And I was wondering also, do I get an additional XP towards Undertaker Undertakings for talking to someone about what it means for something to be real?
Yes, or you could also consider trying something new and then stop yourself.
Oh, yeah, I think it's that one. For sure. Boy, oh boy. Yeah. And also, you marked Undertaker Undertakings with 3. Was that from my last...
It was from getting the major goal.
From the looking into the reflection, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I already marked that one. Okay, so...
Okay, great.
But this emotion XP, I think, was from this scene, so... Yes. Yeah, okay. Yes. So I have one more to add, and I'm like, should I... You know what? I'm going to put it also towards Undertaker Undertakings, rather than continuing to tick up Hide the Evidence a second time, because that'll bring me really close to fulfilling that quest, and I want to see what that reward is.
Everyone, we have reached the end of the chapter, so refresh your willpower full and your MP by 1 if you spent any Chubo, you spent a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you did, yeah. Yeah, you went all out. It was amazing.
You got a lot more information than you could have otherwise. A lot. Maybe too much.
Maybe too much. The Chubo story. Truly.
That's great, because I only have more questions.
Yeah, yeah. Every question, it's like trying to defeat a Hydra. It just sprouts 4 new question heads each. It is great. I love this game so much. I love the way you run it so much. Playing it with you finally, James, is such a pleasure.
Absolute delight. Absolute delight across the board.
I'm so glad we chose Chubo and Seiji. Like, this dynamic is so fun to play with you, and I knew it would be, but, like, nonetheless, it is so good.
So, let's talk about what we just did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, did you have fun?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, in case that wasn't obvious, yes, like, 1,000%, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, I want to praise you both, because you both played this game with flying colors. Congratulations on all those goals ahead of time. I am going to have to do interesting things with Darcy's introduction next week, but I think I can swing it. I think everything will be okay. And from there, well, I think I want to know what your favorite like bit of mechanics has been from this, and then like what your favorite moment to play out was. It gives me information.
I want James to go first, for sure, because he's new.
Yeah. I mean, so far the mechanics are interesting to me. Like I am fascinated by them, because I don't fully know how they work yet, which makes it hard to pick a favorite thing. I have liked... simply chasing the different XP. Like, I know I've always got falling back on, like, ticking away at, like, different things of, like, oh, this could easily be a part of a scene and pulling that in. So that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt. And your favorite moment of just play in general, like, roleplay?
So hard to pick. Truly, truly difficult to pick. Obviously the scene that the GN and I just did was so much fun. Getting Leonardo's, like, every interaction with Leonardo was like a pure bit of delight. There's something that feels very Steven Universe about the whole like setup of Chubo, where you've got like all of these incredible people in this like special and beautiful place that is both mundane and magical at the same time, and on top of that, people are just like characters, and Leonardo is like so intentionally trying to be a thing and so very human at the same time. So it's just delightful to interact with him.
That's very fun. My last question for you, James, before I shift over to Gian, is this game what you thought it would be?
I'm gonna say yes and no. Yes, in that the style of play is kind of what I imagined it to be. In when I was reading the mechanics and like reading reviews of the game to try and understand the mechanics better, like I really understood, like, okay, you know, it is a game that is fundamentally incentivizing certain behaviors to get you to act in the way that like these characters would act. I'd compare it to Belonging Outside Belonging games in that way, like the normal moves, the idea that a normal move reinforces character, a weak move creates a problem, and a strong move resolves a problem. There is like this game feels like somebody took a mechanical microscope around normal moves, and it feels like kind of everything that you can do is a normal move, which is interesting. And like the way that mechanics revolve so far around like the strange powers and whatnot that we have, those feel like you're paying for flavor in a certain way. So like that's interesting, and I think that hit differently. But the thing that really surprised me is how the characters like form themselves in the system, because again, like if you're building a game kind of around whatever that thing that normal moves in Belonging Outside Belonging is, how those characters like form themselves like complete dolls in your mind, and that ties so closely to this like fan fiction thing that Gian has been driving at in their descriptions of the game. And like I feel like I understand that fully, and I will, once we have played this, I feel like I will understand this game for the first time on the level that y'all can talk about it. And I also feel like that is the most important and fundamental way to understand this game. So like a person really needs to play it and meet those characters to actually have experienced the game.
I think so. It's one of my like reasons why I'm using Glassmakers as a scaffolding here, because I think the core book is very nice on its own. It has a lot of information, but I didn't get the game until I was introduced to these characters. Mm. And I want other people to know about them too.
Yeah.
And what about you, Gian? Favorite mechanic, favorite moment?
Gosh, I mean, James already said the moment that we played out recently of the near kiss in the kitchen. So I think I'll also go with like the pool, the moment in the pool of looking into the reflection. Like getting to play horror in this game is really fun for me. In general, I love playing horror, and I feel like I am underutilized for horror as a player often. But it's one of my favorite tones to play in and to write in, and getting to do so is always such a treat. And that was just a taste of where I feel like our game could go, and that was very fun. Favorite mechanic, I mean, having the wish sense just at a constant simmer is very fun. But I do think that really utilize, this is less a favorite mechanic and more just something that I'm noticing now that I'm being very deliberate about it. Like my first game of Chubos, my first season of Chubos, I did not go in with a lot of premeditation basically until the very last session. That was the only session out of an entire, what, like 3 or 4 months of playing where I was like, oh, I am aware of things ahead of time and can use them. And going into this game being really aware of the different quests and the major goals and the ways to get XP and seeing how that impacted the character choices I made, if at all, was really interesting. And I think, like, the most satisfying moment dovetailed with the mirror scene where, or the reflection scene where it's like, I wanted to have a scene like that, period. Like, I wanted a horror moment. And when you started describing the pawns and me realizing, oh, I can achieve a major goal and knock off a creepy scene, that was really satisfying. I really love the way that the narrative goals and the mechanical goals dovetail in this game. It is a very special.
I set those dominoes up for you on purpose. And I'm
exactly.
Glad I didn't pop
them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You set it up and I spiked it and it was wonderful. And it's
this
nice to be.
Just, this game is just setting up and spiking in a nutshell.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I am really looking forward to seeing how this, like, expands my skill set in gaming in terms of, like, this is a normally a really weak point of mine, being able to understand mechanics sufficiently that I can use them for narrative drive. It's why very straightforward systems are usually a better match for me, because I'm accustomed to sitting down to a system totally cold and not playing it that often. But in this case, it's very different, and I'm starting to understand, paradoxically, the appeal of Dungeons and Dragons, because this is how people play Dungeons and Dragons. They familiarize with themselves with the system, even if they don't have a knack for it coming into it, just by virtue of playing it over and over and over again. And then they are able to make it so much more than the sum of its parts. But Jenna is writing in a way where it is more than the sum of its parts already. And so I still think I would prefer this to Dungeons and Dragons. I don't have any beef with D&D, but, like, to be able to understand, like, oh, this is how people play campaign games for the first time is very fucking rewarding. And I'm enjoying it immensely.
Man, Gion, we gotta crack open a game of Invisible Sun at some point.
Got to,
that is
James.
The last.
Got to.
That is the last game where I had a power fantasy in role playing.
Holy shit!
So
wow,
it's like,
okay,
it's like, yeah. But it's such a fascinating thread that you've found, like the joy of system mastery through Chubos, and like I can see that. I can see immersing yourself in that. That's very cool.
Let's do it. This is me committing. Let us play Invisible Sun. I demand it. The people demand it.
This is absolutely wonderful. Before we end, is there anything else that you'd like from me?
Just to express my endless gratitude for being down to run this game so much and being so enthusiastic about sharing your passion for it. It is a wonderful game, and it's one that I hope people, like, rediscover. It's been out for such a long time, and I want it to be widely appreciated. It's a really, really cool system. And again, like, if people can find friends to guide them through fucking fifth edition, surely there must be people out there who can guide their friends through Chubos. And Glassmaker's Dragon is a wonderful introduction to it, because the story arcs are so well realized and there is so much room within them to play and make believe. So I really hope that Glassmaker's Dragon gets a little bit of jetpack momentum, you know, in the days to come.
If I can ask a question, like, because I did open the, like, I did look at the core book a little bit in character creation and whatnot. Is the, like, Glassmaker's Dragon has these pre-built characters like Chubo and whatnot in the core book? Is that giving you the tools that you need to make your own character that would fit in? Okay. This framework. Interesting. Yeah, man, I gotta say, with what this system is doing, I think it is not just easier, but so much more advisable to start with something like Glassmaker's Dragon.
Absolutely. Like, the wide opinion of people who play this game, like, if they've tried Glassmaker's Dragon before, is start with here. It's a lot easier than trying to go in and do character creation blind, because the most difficult thing about character creation in the system is that because a character's abilities have so much to do with their narrative arc, mm-hmm. you have to have an idea of where they're going beforehand when you're designing
yeah.
them. You have to think of this like a writer and not necessarily a role player the way that you would in most games of, like, I want to play a character like this and, like, find out what happens to them. You'll want to go like, oh, I want to play someone who will eventually, like, tragically martyr themselves. Or, I want to play someone who will eventually go through a coming-of-age story. And, like, be able to plan out plot beats ahead of time to, again, set up and spike, which is what this game does best. And it's encouraging you at all points to set up and spike. Make sure that, like, all of your mechanical details reflect what you want out of this character's story. And if you're going in blind, sometimes you'll just be like, oh, this power set sounds cool, and not realize, like, how much of your narrative arc you're kind of, like, attaching to that, and how much it expects you to already, like, understand that these two things are deeply intertwined. And if you go into Glassmakers first, or even just read it before trying to make a character, you'll understand a lot more of what the system expects out of you.
Yeah. And I think there is also a community value to Glassmakers Dragon, like a shared community value. That's not quite the right way to put it. There is a, for lack of a more accurate term, there is a shared fandom value to Glassmakers Dragon that I think is not quite shared by the core text because of the pre-written characters and because of the pre-written arcs, and that, like, just like enjoying the same movie together, the same books where you create AUs and you make your fan art and you write your fan fiction, like, these characters, because they are on certain tracks, you all can experience the same character very differently and have that shared joy while still having your respective very different versions of them in adventures. Like, you are writing fan fiction of a shared beloved character. You know what this is? It reminds me a little bit, actually, of the Keepsake and Connected Path games that I design a lot, where, like, the thing I've said a lot about the latter, like, Connected Path games, is the story is the same, the character framing and the premise of the game is the same, but your character and the way that you play them and the way your story works out is totally unique to you, but you are still sharing that experience with hundreds, at this point maybe thousands, I don't know, of other players. And, you know, that's not unique to that game framework at all, but it is one of the things that people forget is a joy of games, is getting to talk about the things that you love in common. And Glassmakers makes that very easy to do, which I think is really fascinating.
I've seen extremely different takes on the same characters.
Yeah.
I think I myself have, like, very idiosyncratic takes on some of the characters. I think that the way I play Leonardo is, like, different than a lot of other people do. Like, transgender stuff aside, like, a lot of people don't go through with, like, the, like, overzealous affect just because it doesn't suit them as role players.
Sure.
And, like, there are totally options to go ahead with, like, a colder, more, like, robotic affect if that's the kind of thing that you want. But I just, like, I am immediately bought in when you let me overact as a character. I'm there.
Yeah, it was really fun because I'm used to you NPCing Leonardo, and because my co-player in our home game was, like, very assertive and aggressive kind of from, like, day one about pursuing a certain character arc, like, he mellowed out pretty quickly and early on. So getting to see him at his most out there is very fun.
That's not his most out there, like, oh good, he is on, like, one gear of several.
Oh good, that makes me even happier. I can't wait to, like, see him at his most unhinged. Yeah, I mean, this is, like, what we were talking about earlier with, like, Natalia. Like, my take on Natalia was very idiosyncratic and very also, like, a strong take from the beginning because I didn't realize how else to do it. And, like, I think you even commented after our first session, like, your playing Natalia is different than anyone else I've ever seen. And, like, that was really cool to hear and also, like, made me curious about what the baseline is and why I deviated so much, which is why I'm really curious to hear your take on Darcy when she plays with us in the next session.
Yeah, man. So curious.
I know. Which brings
this
me
is going to make your triad very interesting, yeah, the way that your dynamics each bounce off of one another. I'll say right now, your takes on Chubo and Sedgwick are extremely unique. I've never seen anyone play these two the exact same way that you are now, and definitely not with this dynamic.
Ooh, that's very cool. Look at us, James, being special.
I love to be special, and, like, honestly, this is a perfect way to have Darcy come in as this character. I think it's actually going to make it a lot easier to roleplay with her, with these characters already having some kind of pre-established built-in dynamic and connection. Because that, especially like looking at Tour de Fortitude, I like looked at some of the major goals. I'm like, I can't pursue any of those because it doesn't make sense to do that without Darcy present.
Yeah. I wrote those with the idea that you three would be sharing a stage. And it's cool that you guys were able to like make some progress regardless, but I wasn't expecting you to finish anything tonight. If Darcy were here, I think that you would have like gotten these all.
Oh yeah, that's like, not a question. That's
And this brings me to two things very quickly, actually. The first is a group thing, which is related to Darcy, and then the second is I never took my canonical statement, and so I'll share it after as the second thing, but because Darcy had to miss today, and James, you said in the signal thing, this is just me clarifying, you said like this can be a prequel. Does that mean we are doing three more sessions in addition to today, or are we playing it by ear, or are we doing like a hard three sessions period so there will only be two more after this?
I will allow Victor to kind of lead our way on that because, you know, Victor's a game master here. But in my mind, it's like, yeah, we could easily do three sessions in addition to this if we needed. I just, you know, I wouldn't want to be like, well, Darcy, you missed the first session, so there are only two more or whatever.
I think I want three more sessions on top of this. If that means like I need to write more stuff out like after this, like that's fine. My pen can just take that.
Because you really hate writing Chugo stuff and customizing Chugo stuff.
Oh, I hate it so much.
You hate it so much.
It's the worst thing in the world. I hate writing bespoke content for my favorite role-playing game.
Also, God, dude, also, sorry, this is a quick aside, but it was so fucking funny noticing myself having to work so hard not to, like, work my general Bay Area slang into playing a teenager. I'm so used to just saying California and specifically, like, Bay Area slang, and, like, that's one of the reasons I made Natalia from the Bay Area, so I wouldn't have to worry about it, and now playing someone who is really not from the Bay Area, it really, I was, like, really struggling a couple times. It was very funny. I think I took back, I retracted a dude at one point. So James,
you did.
If you need to edit that out,
took your dude back to the store to return it.
No,
we don't need to edit that. Like,
you know, okay. Rescinded dude, the ultimate characterization technique.
I, you know, as a person who uses dude as every single part of a grammatical structure possible, in every flavor possible, it really does take a lot of work. So this that was a labor of love for this game and for all of you. But yeah, for canonical history, speaking of mechanics and like how structure of game might affect them, because I know this is a short game, I think if this were like a campaign where we were like, we're gonna play this for a season, or like it's gonna be ongoing, I would have taken like one of the like, I am a thoughtful person, or like, I care about my friends. But no, I know that we only have a few more sessions, so I am in fact taking I am someone who can touch the unknown. I'm going to let people perceive that about me because I know that is going to make for potentially bigger choices in the next three sessions, which I think would be fun.
That's bonkers. I respect it.
Yeah, this is my version of spending four miracle points like from the jump in like scene two. and I'm excited.
You have tools. Use them.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited. Thank you so much for running this tonight, Victor. I could not have spent this night in a better way. This was wonderful.
Yeah, this was an absolute delight.
From the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. This has been, I'm not sure if I've expressed it enough, like delightful for me as well. I like running this game, and I thought that that was a pretty seamless two chapters.
Yeah. It was like, we were improvising, but it felt narrated for a lot of it, you know? Like, that was beautiful roleplay. I had such a good time.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. As always, a humble and hearty thanks to our supporters on Patreon. If you want to help us in a non-monetary way, the best thing you can do is tell a friend. You can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Every 5-star review we get helps new people find the show. For the latest OneShot news, be sure to follow me on Twitter @OneShotRPG. Look us up on Facebook @facebook.com/OneShotPod, or look for news on the site @OneShotPodcast.com. If you want to inquire about ad rates, live appearances, commissioning episodes, or you have a general question or comment for the show, contact us @GameMaster@OneShotPodcast.com. OneShot is a production of the OneShot Podcast Network in association with Paracosm Press. Paracosm Press is a Chicago-based tabletop games publisher. You can find more information at paracosmpress.com. Finally, that music, which is right now swelling up over my voice, is Adventure by Be Your Own Pet, courtesy of Infinity Cat Records. See you next time, heroes.